So I've been really happy with that. I have been kind of forecasting to the board here for a couple of years now that we were kind of at the bottom of the insurance trough and anticipating some creep there a little bit. What did they use for the special term, Sharon?
I don't recall.
We were laughing because they come up with some new term for essentially rates are going to be increasing. Yeah. Was it uplift?
Oh, uplift.
Yeah, there's going to be some uplift.
Yes, great uplift.
We kind of laugh a little bit. Yeah. But for the most part, we anticipate seeing a little bit of change. As reported to the board last year, we were able to get a renewal option on our property last year, and we'll be exercising this year. We don't expect a huge increase there, but possibly the following year, because that was a good move on our part to secure that renewal option. And of course, you know, there's been a lot of natural disasters and stuff, and that all tends to feed into it. As hopefully the board knows, we haven't had an insurance loss. I mean, we're a very, very good customer and a low-risk kind of customer to a degree, at least using our past performance as an indicator. And we leverage that a lot. When we have discussions with our broker, I said, well, we haven't had a loss. Why are you giving us an increase? You know, you give it to the other guy that had the loss. And, you know, you can work that to a certain amount. But anything you want to add there, Jack? I mean, you're the expert here.
No, I mean, I think you're probably right in planning for what they call an uplift. I've never heard that term. There was a soft market for at least 10 to 15 years while I was in the business. And this got out, but it's coming back. And especially these programs. I don't know what Wortha, is it Wortha?
Wortham. And who was recently bought by Marsh.
By Marsh, yeah.
Or are they consolidated?
A lot of these programs are very good, but sometimes they get stung, too. You get a concentrated risk with mm-hmm. one class of risk, and you can get stung on it. So just be prepared. But obviously, if you've had no losses, you're doing a good job, and you're probably a very attractive client.
Been good so far, and I've just been happy. We've been able to keep a lid on it because everything else keeps going up, and at least that's been holding pretty steady and actually declining in some areas.
So, Trey, does this insurance thing also speak to our insurance for air travel?
It does.
So does anything that happened recently in Ketchikan affect those rates?
They say that that is one of our likely areas to see some increases as unknown aviation coverage. So that we anticipate seeing a little bit of that. It is impacting the overall market, even though our record's clean. That's a good example of one that, you know,
you have no control over.
There's pressure on the overall market, and as noted in that handout I provided, there some of the providers are going, we're essentially going to ratchet up for everybody the premiums, or else we're just going to step back from the market. They've got some recovery to do, and I guess that's what they're coining in the uplift.
Yes, Joel.
So I just have one question, and maybe you don't know, but I'm just curious about the level of D&O coverage and whether how necessary it is to have that much coverage.
It's a great question.
I'd just be curious I'm just wondering if there might be some savings for us next round in the balancing out.
So I think we've tried to protect the board and officers as much as reasonably possible. And I guess it just gets down to a risk assessment, right? What the board's comfortable with. Certainly, we can do a lower level of coverage for a cheaper price. And, you know, is that something that should be considered or not?
Well, maybe we can add it to the list next year to talk to them and just get a sense as to what they're seeing. The reason I ask that is that this is a quasi, even though we're not directly agency of the state of Alaska, we're sort of a quasi-agency of the state of Alaska, and there's certain immunities that come just from that as well, so.
Yeah, I'm more than happy to look at it. As you can see on the handout that we did on the laydown on the table there, you can see it, get a quick snapshot. You know, it's about 100 grand for DNO.
Right.
And I would say I would agree with you, Joel, that we're probably excessive there. But we haven't pushed to try to reduce that.
Right here.
Oh, yeah.
We pay. That's what we pay typically.
Good question, though. I think it's worth looking at.
Yep.
Could be saving 50, 40, 50 grand a year for something that may not be that impactful. But then that gets me a little nervous about cyber and all this other stuff going on. And I will say that, you know, we don't, we haven't enlisted hard on the cybersecurity insurance area yet. And I don't know if any of the munis have done that. But it's an area of risk, certainly, and escalating risk all the time, in my opinion.
Do you have any cyber liability coverage at all?
No.
I would definitely
so
ask your broker about that.
Well, so the challenge with cyber, and if I recall correctly, feel free to jump in here, Sharon, if I'm missing it. I think you can only cover portions of it, and I think that would be the administrative side, not the operational side of the business. At least I think that's what we were told,
mm-hmm.
correct?
Yep.
And then it's super onerous to give them all the information mm-hmm. on how you're trying to comply with whatever level of protections they're wanting. I will tell you our approach, just because first of all, it doesn't cover our operational end, and that's what I think is one of our bigger risks, frankly, is that I'm attacking that from a different perspective, and that's through our IT provider.
Yes.
And finding expertise there for boots on the ground, intrusion testing, and all this other stuff. And I'll go into that a bit when we talk about that particular contract that's coming up.
So on the different boards and committees and groups that you serve on, I'm sure that cybersecurity comes up on those pages, and they're all suffering with the same thing we are in regards to the operational side of things.
Mm-hmm. Every conference that I go to now has a cybersecurity component. I can pretty much reliably say that. It's the number one topic at every board meeting, or every boardroom, I would say, is cyber exposure. And for the utility industry, obviously, that's taken a fair bit beyond into a different direction, you know, dovetails into reliability and availability and those key components. I'll say that we make a strong effort to divide our business network from our operational network. That's where it starts. And so if you can segregate those things. And then one of the key components is just minimizing your access points, and that's one of the key things. If the further you can get those down, the less points you got to manage through firewalls and security and things like that. So we're looking hard at that, and of course we reported earlier that we did a very extensive cyber intrusion audit and testing on our facilities, both operational and business, which were. And we learned a lot out of that, just a tremendous amount, and we've been implementing some of those changes. So
good.
So we've been trying to be really proactive on that area. I would just say that, you know, we've made a pointed effort to be proactive on how we're addressing those issues with cybersecurity. I'm not sure the insurance area is the place to do it at this time.
Especially more in the operational sector.
Yeah, especially in the operation sides. They don't even cover it from what they told me. And if they do, it would be really, really expensive. I mean, it'd be like saying, you can go get insurance, like on your transmission line. If the power's down and you stop making sales, you can get insurance to cover that. But it's really expensive, right? So you can probably get insurance for anything. It's just a matter of if it's really the risk-reward balance you're looking for.
Right.
All right, I think, let me make sure that I covered what I we kind of bounced back into a section there on the insurance there. Let me just do a quick look here.
You had to see for office.
Let me talk. I got a couple more topics here, and I know I'm dragging this part on a little bit.
No, that's good. It's good information.
So at SEPA office, we did close the deal on two lots straight across from the Ketchikan Airport. I think the location is really good. It's going to give the organization great exposure there. It's also very convenient with regard to location to the airport and travel and such. The lots, combined are about 150 by 150. Which when you think about having pole storage and stuff where you have 100 plus foot poles or whatever, that's not a very big lot. I mean, it's not that big a space, so I don't think that we've went out and purchased something extravagant or too much. I think it's probably right size. So we did hire an architect and to sit down, an architect firm, and with Welsh Whiteley, and actually the chairman was at our kickoff meeting, conveniently showed up, and so sat down and kind of walked through a few of the nuances. And what I'm proposing to do at this time is working with the architect to put together a couple of, I'll say, conceptual plans, to bring back to the board some meat to talk about. If we started from scratch, we could sit here and talk about, do we have segregated restrooms? We could go into really fine detail, and hopefully we can avoid doing that with the board. I'd prefer to bring a couple of packages to you and let you give some substantive input on those particular things. So, but right now, that's moving along well. And hopefully I'll have something to bring back to the board to the December meeting and to talk about. And of course, look forward to your ideas. Chairman provided some great input at initial kickoff meeting, and hopefully we'll get that moving down the road. I'll also add that I did get our lease for the borough. We were coming up for renewal on that. And generally, that's been a five-year renewal process. And I've actually got them to lower that to a two-year renewal with a potential option to sit down and negotiate an additional year or two if we need it. So I've kind of synchronized that with the possibility of building a build-out in the next couple of years. So I think that just gives the organization a little bit more flexibility.
Did you renew that already?
We got a letter back from them.
It's all signed. Yeah.
We actually need to have this body ratify that.
Oh, December meeting? Agenda? Okay.
It's part of our procurement.
Okay.
Right, thanks for the reminder there. Yeah, it's that would take place at the beginning of the year, I think, is the...
Yeah,
on any leases, you're correct. Thank you.
So for the rest of the board too, Trey, I don't know if you have it someplace else in the packet, but you might want to touch on the fact that as a new property owner, you immediately jumped into an argument with DOT.
So I just got a little footnote at the bottom there that, I don't know, was within a week of buying the property or something, they DOT contacted us and wanted to take some of the property. And at a discounted rate at that, and we brought it up to the board at the last meeting, and the board directed staff to go take a different approach to that. And so far I've talked to, I don't know, three or four different people with DOT and have voiced my great displeasure at their approach. Have asked them to come down and talk to us. And we're not really asking that much. They're wanting a couple of feet off the front of our lot, and they're wanting to widen their ditch or move their ditch back a little bit. And after getting some feedback from the board at the last meeting, thinking it through, it's like, well, why don't we get rid of the ditch completely? They're typically not maintained. They collect trash. They got weeds growing in them. That could be flat. That could be a sidewalk. They could put a culvert in there real easily. Could modify their plan a little bit. So I told them, First of all, that's one thing that we're requesting, that they modify their plan and do away with the ditch. Next thing is their offer was not reasonable, was under the value we just paid. Voiced our displeasure at, they were talking about putting a bus stop at the next lot down from us to the north. They've got this in their mind that they want to move it out of the parking lot over there and put it across on the other side of the highway. And I'm just thinking, everybody speeds up right there as they're headed out, and you know, you're gonna have people in the dark, in the driving rain, toting suitcases across the highway where everybody's speeding up, and it just doesn't sit well with me. I don't think it's well thought out. So I've also suggested that they reconsider that, and as the board pointed out, that you know, you guys have taken out most of those island type things in town because they're difficult to maintain around. So where it's at today is I've told them that's our position. I've invited them to come talk to us a couple of times, and then somebody new will call me up, and they'll go through the same thing again, and you know, they're stuck on their position. I said, well, I guess you can just come get it through eminent domain. It might take you a year or two to do it, but in my understanding, they're potentially in litigation with the large lot across the street, which is the most important one for the whole project. I've heard that they've also settled with an adjacent landowner at this time. So I just heard that yesterday. So there's some stuff moving on a little bit. I'm still waiting for them to circle back. I've also heard that they might have redesigned the bus stop to make it smaller or such, but it's still on that side of the road. That's my position. If the board wants me to take a little different one, then let me know. And otherwise, I'm going to keep holding firm on it.
Yeah, I think you're on the right track.
Okay. And, okay. So just best practices and process improvements. I'll just say that, you know, we're always looking for opportunities to do things better and more efficiently. And really, I think the whole staff is engaged in that and on all fronts. And I won't talk about it anymore other than to say that you'll hear a lot of those type of improvements and things happening in staff reports. One thing I will highlight that I think is important is I'm implementing a requirement for everybody to wear PFDs when they're on a plane or a boat for the organization. You know, a small plane, of course, you know, for Alaska Airlines. But I think it's just a good policy for us to do internally. And we've ordered those, and they should be here shortly, and then we'll issue those to employees and staff, and everybody will be wearing them.
These inflatable jacket type?
Yeah, they'll be like, there's the SOS suspender type looking thing, and the manual deployment. But I think it's just a good thing to do. And tied into that, we've also started some boat operation training as well, just so people have basic fundamental training. And sometimes you assume people come here and they know how to drive a boat, and sometimes that's not so true. Or anchor. I mean, anchoring's a pretty important thing. If you're on a brushing crew and you go anchor your boat and you go ashore to work for the day and you come back and your boat's not there, it could be a potentially life-threatening situation. So I think we're also focused on safety-related process improvements, and those are a couple that I think are important. And just wrap things up on my report, all of our positions are filled at this time, and I'm happy with where we're at. I think we've got a great team put together, and things are running really smooth right now. So
good.
With that, I'm going to give that back to you, Mr. Chair.
I appreciate the Marsh report and insurance report stuff. Is there any particular page in that you should draw the board's attention to in regards to coverage and what we're covering and all that kind of stuff? I kind of looked when you were talking at page 62. It had
the page 62, is that's the one of the
with the chart, that one right there.
Oh,
yeah.
I got you right. Yeah.
All right, it just, it's an explanation of our core coverages and then some of our, I'll say, umbrella excess coverages that go above that. And it kind of gives you, I'll say, kind of the wedding cake layered approach where you can see where sometimes certain insurance companies will only go up to so much coverage for a particular thing, and you know, you need to partner with another one, or you do an excess coverage over the top of another one. I think I don't have a lot to add to this.
Yeah, I just thought it was a good snapshot of how it kind of worked.
Yeah, and it's helpful because, you know, insurance, you know, some people think, oh, car insurance, how complicated could it be? Well, our insurance is pretty complicated, and we spend $500,000 a year on it. So it's kind of good to see how it all lays out. And if you look down at the bottom, it kind of gives you, in those little parentheses down there, you can see the property segmentation, the casualty, and then the management liability.
Why is this $9 million potential coverage gap there for the helipad premises liability? I mean,
you want to answer that
one,
Chair?
The helipads are not well understood by the underwriters. Mm-hmm. They can't seem to grasp the reality that these helipads that we manage are remote. And so they're used to helipads that are out within a lot of other infrastructure. And so our remote pads aren't visited more than a few times a year with our inspections. And so they don't have a market quite like ours for these remote helipads. It isn't something that what they're doing right now. There's a guy named Mark Curtis that is visiting with the underwriter and trying to explain to him.
I guess my point is I don't understand why it's a potential coverage.
Well, because it's being negotiated by Mark Curtis right now with the underwriter.
So what he's saying is the excess liability carrier is not going to include the helipad liability.
That's right.
But they might.
Yes. It's being negotiated. Our coverage isn't up until the 1st of November, so we still have, we're still waiting on all the binders to come in.
Okay.
And so we meet with them weekly to discuss these things, and so we're just kind of on hold for some of those answers that we're waiting
should
for.
Know in a couple of weeks, they said, by the 10th maybe or so,
yeah,
on how those things are progressing. Good question, though.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I thought about bringing Gary in just to update the board, but I didn't. We don't really have where our firm quotes are at this year, so I thought it might be a little bit early for that conversation. But I'm happy to bring Gary into the conversation anytime. And Gary is our Griffin is our insurance consultant that gives us some guidance in that area, helps us get some of the placements and stuff. And ask some questions that maybe we wouldn't think of. So, but at some point in time, we can bring him in and conference him in sometime and let the board shoot some questions at him. The DNO is a good question, and probably some other ones in there as well. I think back to you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so is there any other questions, comments in regards to the CEO report? If not, we're going to be moving into some other business, and it might be a time we've been in our seats for an hour and a half to take just a short break. We understand that there'll be somebody in at 3 to remove some of the food process stuff, and we will also take a break then. But I think right now,
okay,
if anybody needs to get up and take a break, let's take a short one.
How are we doing? All the stuff.